irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.
Okay, Jim Potts, and I'm back on the air, and let me tell you, I'm excited to be here today. For those of you that have followed me on my Listen Up podcast, on my weekly Listen Up blog, welcome to my new weekly show live on LA Talk Radio. For the newcomers, thanks for tuning in as well. I really appreciate that. You know, I want to give you a little intro here at the beginning to let you know that in the weeks that are going to be coming up, I'll be having guests on my show with various topics, all involving the workplace, be it the situations with domestic terrorism, violence in the workplace, or other work-related issues that may come up as well, all associated with the topics we'll be discussing today. Well, I got to tell you, I've been asked what prompted me to move in the direction of actually doing a live weekly radio show. Well, it's simple. I've been extremely concerned, as most, regarding the increasing threat of domestic terrorism on America and on the workplace as well. As a result of that, I've spoken in front of political groups, political associations, schools, businesses of all kinds of different industries, chambers of commerce, and really in the general public as well. And I have to tell you that I just feel that it's not enough. I don't believe that the state or federal governments are doing enough. So with my background in law enforcement, I intend to heighten the awareness of the general public, businesses, as well as employees. Over the last, I'd say about 2 years now, my crew and I have actually gone out. We've done a lot of training with active shooter training. We've done site assessments. We've traveled as far up as the state of Washington. We've been out of state to Las Vegas. So we've kind of been all over the place with all these different industries to be able to assist businesses in understanding exactly what they need to do in the event of anything happens. So I've got an excellent crew working for me. Very glad to have them on board. Some of them are ex-military, ex-law enforcement. So we're out there doing our thing, and we're doing the best we can to help the general public as well. Now, I have to tell you that one of the problems in America is that we have a tendency to become too complacent. If the incident did not happen to them personally, well, we have a tendency to forget. When the media settles everything down and they move on to whatever the most current story is, citizens have a tendency to just put it on the back burner unless it's something that has actually touched them personally. But the times are changing. Or are they? You know, actually, domestic terrorism has been around since the late 1700s. It's not new. And over the coming shows, we'll be discussing a number of past incidents along with current events as well. Now, when I say it's not new, let's take a look at what happened in Parkland, Florida. If you ask the ordinary person, what was the name of the school in Parkland, Florida? I bet they can't tell you. I'm going to be discussing that incident a little bit later, so I won't give you the name now. And I can already see out there where people are probably jumping on the internet to look up the name of the school. But I'm not going to give it to you now. And by the way, as we go through this today in these different areas, if in fact you want to give me a call, you can call 818-602-4929. Again, that's 818-602-4929. And you can ask me any questions that may come up regarding the subject area that we're speaking about today. Or if you choose to want to send me an email, you can do that as well. I remember when I was doing the podcast, probably about 80% of the time we got more emails than we did phone calls because sometimes people are just a little bit shy about being on the air. But if you want to email me, you can email me at listenupwithjp@pottsandassociates.com. Again, that's listenupwithjp@pottsandassociates.com, and we'll be responding to your emails either throughout the show, or if the emails come in after the show is over, then is what we'll do is use those emails for the following show. Or if it's something that's a little bit more critical, is what I'll do is take the time to respond to those emails at that time as well. You know, people ask me when we speak about this word called terrorism, exactly what is it? And most people don't know the definitions of it. So I'm just going to take a moment to at least share that with you. The old definition, so to speak, was the use of violence or threatened use of violence in order to achieve a political, religious, or ideological aim. Now, more recently, it's really any act that threatens society for the purpose of exploiting fear. And that's the shame of it, because people are doing that. If you look on the news and you see some of these events that have taken place, and you look at the shooters, what they've done, whether it's in the school system or whether or not it's just in the general public, like a Las Vegas situation, those are situations where even though the person has some motives, and sometimes we'll never know what those motives are, what did they do? They created fears in us. It puts fear in citizens like we've never known before. Now, some of the foreign countries, of course, have had these things going on for a very long time. We are now becoming a little bit more used to it, even though in the past we've had these issues. And again, we have a tendency to forget. Now, with those opening comments, I want to mention that when you're out in the general public, you have to be aware of your surroundings now, and you have to be vigilant, and you have to be safe out there. Because again, I will emphasize, the times are actually changing. Now, one of the emphases for the work environment that I want you to understand is where these acts of violence normally come from. Who perpetrates these acts of violence? Well, the first is disgruntled former employees, disgruntled current employees, irate customers, as well as domestic violence situations. And I will tell you, I was speaking really quick on the domestic violence situation. Now the state of California has actually given employers an opportunity now to get restraining orders on behalf of their employee. Now, the reason for that is because prior, an employer couldn't do that, even though a domestic violence situation could have impacted the work environment. So what did they do? They would have to turn around the employee who was the victim, and they would have to get the restraining order. Now, though, it's permitting employers to do it because domestic violence situations can actually spill over into the work environment. Now, if you watch the news, you'll know what I'm talking about. One more recent example that was a few months back was the second San Bernardino shooting. What happened with that? There was a married couple that was working. The individual was a teacher in San Bernardino. You may recall that on the news. And as a result of that relationship failing, or there was an issue with it, they had separated. And the husband then went back into the work environment and not only killed the teacher employee, but accidentally shot a 9-year-old student as well before taking his own life. The problem with that was that they did not know that there was a situation between the husband and the wife. And that's why employers, as an example, need to stress with their staff members, with their staff as well as their employees, if any of them are engaged in a domestic violence situation at home, that they need to at least let the employer know, because the employer may be able to assist them with protecting them at a minimum, at least when they're at work. We don't want it to spill over and have innocent bystanders at work injured as well. And that's why the restraining orders might be something that's more appropriate. Again, if the employer knows about it, and that's very important. If the situation arises, you know, the businesses need to consult with their labor law attorney and get the appropriate docs filed with the court system. Okay? So, having said that, we're going to now move into a little different area here, and we're going to be talking about the main area for today, which is, in fact, is going to be on domestic terrorism. Now, domestic terrorism in the workplace in and of itself is not new. Now, generally speaking, when we think about what happens in a work environment with domestic terrorism, we're thinking something maybe on the more of the international front, things of that nature. Domestic terrorism can also be acts of violence in the workplace. That's what you have to understand. And employers, if they're not careful, can be faced with liability because of the fact that somebody in their work environment is, in fact, an individual that has a tendency to be, well, we'll just say an angry person, so to speak. And then as a result of that, they turn around and injure a coworker, and the employer does nothing about it. Well, you have to understand that these days, those kind of situations are behind us. The employer now has an affirmative obligation to take some kind of action against that employee who committed that violence in the workplace. And in addition to that, the employer needs to have a zero tolerance policy in place, a written policy, needs to be part of the employee handbook, which everybody signs off on. And if in fact somebody engages in that behavior, then they need to take the appropriate action. Now, let's go back in time a little bit. If we go back far enough, we're going to see different acts, but this one in particular that I want to talk about just very briefly has to do with the LA Times. Now, let me just give you an example. October 1st, 1910, there was a bombing of the LA Times. 21 people were killed, and 100 were injured. They used dynamite. They placed it in front of the newspaper's office building, and all these individuals got killed because of a dispute. Now, the reason why I mention the issue about bombing is that a lot of times people think that the only way that all this violence takes place is through the use of some kind of handgun or, you know, shotgun or rifle, or automatic rifle, etc. It doesn't happen only that way. And that's what's important for people to understand as well. And there's a lot of controversy about the issue of who's going to get guns, who can't get guns, etc. I'll talk about that a little bit later. But understand that if somebody out there really wants to perpetrate something against the employer, the business, whatever the case may be, an individual, they'll find a way to do it. And we'll be talking about schools in the next segment as well, and the pitfalls and safety tips regarding that. Now, another one that took place was the Wall Street bombing. Now, if you ask the average person, Wall Street bombing, what are you talking about? Well, that actually took place on September 16th, 1920. And that was in a situation where there was actually a horse-drawn wagon filled with explosives once again. And it was detonated in front of the J.P. Bank on Wall Street. That one killed 38 people, wounded 143. And the perpetrators in that one were never caught. So when we start looking at all of these different issues that come up regarding domestic terrorism, we are really in a situation where history in many respects is really repeating itself. It's just that we're not doing anything or doing enough about it. Now, it always amazed me that during the presidential election that the candidates always spoke to the issue of international terrorism. It was very few times, if any, that they actually spoke to the real issue, which is domestic terrorism. Since the Timothy McVeigh bombing in Oklahoma City, there has been a huge number of events that have taken place. Now, when you look at that, you say, what have we done about that? And again, that was a bombing. And what have we done about that? Well, when these things happen, once again, if it didn't happen to us directly, what do? We simply move on. We can't do that anymore. We need to be looking into why. What are the causes of these things? What is pushing people to the extent that they actually want to commit these atrocities? Now, when we'll be talking about Columbine a little bit later, there's information that suggests that the reason why the Columbine shooters engaged was because of the Oklahoma bombing, and that they wanted to do something a little bit more drastic than that. So sometimes we have these copycat situations where people are doing things. But the real issue with domestic terrorism that we probably are a little bit more in tune to, it has to do with these lone wolf situations. You know, the Colorado movie theater, that's a lone wolf situation. They're not working with any other groups and things of that nature. So the government and the candidates, in my opinion, probably didn't cover that deep enough, only because of the fact that how do you control a lone wolf situation? And you may think that that's not a business-related issue, but it was. Because what about the people who actually worked there? For them, that, in fact, was violence in the workplace. So a lot of these incidents that are taking place that they're calling non-terrorists, like Fort Hood, as an example, I think it was under the Obama administration, when they said, well, that's not an act of terrorism. Well, it's still a working environment for the individuals who work there. So you always have to look at that, you know, from that perspective. Now, these lone wolf situations are very hard to control, very hard to control. Why? Because you don't know what's going to cause somebody to just snap one day. Now, you hear these different things after the fact about how somebody may have been bullied. They were mistreated by somebody. They were upset by the fact that they got terminated. Well, you know, those situations are real, but were there warning signs before that? Another issue that we have in this country is that people are afraid to speak up. Look at the first San Bernardino shootings. What happened with that? Neighbors said that they thought something was strange about this particular couple. They saw some things, but they were afraid of saying something because of the fact that they said that they didn't want to be called racist, etc. See, that's the real challenge for us. We have so much litigation where people are suing each other. People get afraid to say things. But we have to put those times behind us. We have to put ourselves in a situation now where we need to be able to assist law enforcement. Law enforcement needs our help. They can't do it without us. Now, I don't mean to make people paranoid. I don't want people calling and picking up the phone at every little drop of the hat, and you'd wish that people would put some common sense to it. But the realities are there are so many eyes and ears out here that we need to start paying closer attention. Now, some of these spouses, like the shooter from the nightclub in Florida, as an example, I think the wife claimed that she didn't know anything about it, etc. There's got to be enough warning signs out there for people to realize that something simply is not right. Some people talk about mental illness. Well, I don't know. It's very difficult for the average citizen to be able to determine whether or not somebody is suffering from some kind of mental illness. So that makes it a little bit tougher, in my opinion. But we do the best that we can with it. If you see something suspicious going on out there, you need to say something. More importantly, you need to be aware of your surroundings, because quite frankly, awareness is no longer about security. Awareness is now about survival, and we have to start paying attention. All right? Now, let's talk about something else. I want you to keep in mind that mass shootings are acts of violence that involve a combination of ill intentions, vulnerable victims, and harmful capabilities, whether we're talking about in the general public or in the workplace. Now, workplace shootings in general come from, as I mentioned, disgruntled former employees, current employees, irate customers, and domestic violence. Now, those signs, in my opinion, and those situations in the workplace, once again, that's when managers and supervisors, in my opinion, need to be paying attention to what's going on around them. And I'm going to talk a little bit later on about, you know, things that you can watch out for to see whether or not maybe a person may fit the so-called profile of a possible active shooter. Now, if any of you have been involved in an incident or any of these types of incidents, you feel comfortable about calling in or sending me an email about it, then that would be great. Once again, it's 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. Or, once again, you can email me at listenupwithjp@pottsandassociates.com. Now, is what I want you to think about with this domestic terrorism. I want you to get out a pen and paper, because I'm going to give you like 8 warning signs to watch out for regarding identifying a potential shooter in the workplace. Now, that's going to be in a couple of minutes, so you give you a little bit of time to do that. Let me speak for a moment on what we actually do. My team, we actually go out and assist businesses by doing what we call site assessments. And what the site assessment is, what we do is we determine the strengths and weaknesses of businesses. So we go in, we look at the facility, we look at the neighborhood. We take a lot of things into consideration to see if this business is in fact a business that could be low on their security measures. So we look at the lighting even. We even look at whether or not they have cameras in place, security systems in place, etc. Now, while we do that, we also turn around and have an individual that actually interviews employees. Now, it's not all employees, it's a random sampling. But let me just tell you, you'd be amazed at the stories that we hear from employees who, in fact, have never told their managers and supervisors about some kind of act from either a current employee or a disgruntled or irate customer or a domestic violence situation. So sometimes we draw out information that would actually shock you. Now, the second thing that we do after we do the site assessment is then we get back to the employer and we let them know that, in fact, what we have found, the strengths, the weaknesses, and we put that in the form of a report to them. Now, we also give them a matrix that shows them the percentages and how they measure up with other businesses in their industry. We show the percentages based upon the different crimes that could be committed in their workplace or any workplace, quite frankly. So we basically give them a measuring stick where they can take a look at how they basically are rated. After that, we then go back and we write a workplace security plan. And, you know, workplace security plans have actually been required since 1994, as well as the feds, as well as the state of California have been requiring that. Cal OSHA also has dipped into that same arena with the requirements that employers are supposed to follow. So we write the workplace security plan, and when we finish with the workplace security plan, we then write the procedures and protocols that the businesses can follow as well. Now, having said all of that, when we finish with that, we also then do the active shooter training. We train managers first because managers need to understand some things from a liability standpoint. And then we train the employees as well in a variety of areas that have to do with active shooter. So we cover the gamut for employers, and that's what my team has been doing now. Are out there in the last 24 months or so. Maybe it was a little bit longer than that. And that's all based on some of the things that I learned when I was in law enforcement. Okay, now, let's talk about a few other things here. You got those pens and papers ready? Okay, great. I want to give you what they say is the 8 warning signs of a possible active shooter. And I'll stick to the work environment because obviously you don't know the profile of somebody that doesn't work for the company. It's just somebody out there in the general public. Now, and speaking about that, when you're out in the general public, once again, be aware of your surroundings. I'm not telling you to be paranoid. Simply be aware of your surroundings and what's going on. And one of the upcoming shows, probably next week, I'll probably talk about what to do if you're at a mall, if you're at a restaurant, if you're out on the street. I'll talk to you about safety tips that you can follow that may actually help you. I was actually in a situation where I had trained some individuals, and as it turns out, they were at the Las Vegas shooting. And I found out after that they had survived, and I was contacted and told that the training that we had given actually helped to save some lives because of the fact that they followed everything that we said. So I'll be giving out those tips in the future where we can, you know, hopefully save some lives or, you know, not have somebody injured, to make a long story short. Okay, the first one. Now, what I'm going to give you now are the standard profiles of an individual. Now, there's nothing that's 100% guaranteed, so let me put that out there. None of the things that any of us can do out there in terms of the training can ever guarantee anybody's safety. Is what we try to do is at least reduce the risk to the safety. So, as an example, the first one has to do with fascination with weapons. Law enforcement out there says that watch the person who's really fascinated with weapons. Now, I'm not talking about people that have, you know, hunting guns, hunting rifles, and I guess you can use those now also because I guess in the last incident it had to do with a shotgun. But hunters aren't generally fascinated with the weapons. It's the ones that are more in tune to the automatic rifles. These automatic rifles are presenting a real problem. And those are the ones that, as an employer, that, or even as a citizen with neighbors, need to be concerned about. Those automatic rifles have a tendency to create a lot of damage, so to speak. Now, the person is always talking about the latest gun shows. Have you heard about the latest AR that's out there? You have some of these individuals that are even building their own automatic rifles. And I actually know a couple of people that do that. And I would hope that they're not somebody that fits into the rest of the profile. But at any rate, those are the people that law enforcement says to keep an eye out in the work environment, more specifically that I'm speaking about now. Now, the next one has to do, number two has to do with substance abuse. Substance abuse. Now, substance abuse, in my opinion, gets very tricky. And the reason why I say that is, what's the definition of substance abuse? Look, we know when people get strung out on drugs, etc. But there are people that actually have issues and problems, but they manage it. They manage it in terms of, in the work environment, sometimes you really don't know. And that, to me, makes it a little bit more difficult now to be able to tell. Now, a number of states have passed, you know, laws regarding the recreational use of marijuana, as an example. So I'll just talk about California right at the moment, because it was passed out here, just like it was passed in Colorado and the other, I don't know, seven or eight states, wherever it is right now. And one has to wonder, you know, is that a good thing? Well, it's been passed. But the California Supreme Court, back in 1996, as an example, passed the law that said that California employers do not have to honor the use of marijuana. So back then it had to do with medicinal marijuana. Now it's recreational use, but it's the same thing. And the California Supreme Court and the United States Supreme Court both stated the same thing, that they, in fact, employers in California do not have to recognize the use of that. So, but I, you know, again, I'm not a expert on drugs, so I'm not going to pretend to be. So when we talk about substance abuse, I'm not necessarily saying that people who smoke marijuana, that it could be a problem. Some people feel that marijuana and the use of marijuana is a gateway drug. That's a long-standing argument that it could lead to other things. So I'm speaking about substance abuse in general. The third one, I think, is very important, and that one is on stress. Stress. Look, people get stressed out on their job. You hear it all the time regarding workers' comp, I'm being overloaded, and the people are being stressed out. So as a result of stress sometimes, then they explode, and you know they, and so those are considerations in my opinion. But I look at it like there's always going to be a certain amount of stress associated with most jobs. So I don't hang my hat on the fact of recognizing that that's the major problem. It's other issues, in my opinion, that really sets people off a little bit harder, and that's how they were treated in the work environment, which for some people could be stressful. It could fit under the stressful. I get that. But generally speaking, managers and supervisors, to me, should be knowing their personnel well enough that if all of a sudden somebody's getting too stressed out, I think that they need to address that. And by the way, before I forget, for those managers and supervisors out there that are listening, you'll have employees who will come to you and they'll talk to you about their personal problems. Is what I would strongly encourage you not to do is to give them advice about personal problems. Stick with things that are associated with work. They got a personal problem at home. I understand that. I get it. But just remember something. If you give somebody some advice, especially in a situation where they're having like some kind of marital problem or something of that nature, or relationship problem, and now you're advising them, they may carry your name home on their lips, which is what you're not going to want. And that person could come back up to the work environment looking for you. And we've already seen that. So you want to be very careful about that as well. Okay, number four. This is the one that should be of a concern, and it's called a violent history. Violent history. If you know about an employee that's engaging in violent behavior and you, as an employer, don't do anything about it because, as an example, they're your your top producer, your top seller, your best employee, you remember something. There are things out there, you know, in litigation. There are issues in litigation that has to do with things like, you know, negligent retention. So you have a person, you know that they're a violent person, you know they got an anger management issue, and what do? Nothing, because they're your number one employee. Just remember, when you do that, that could expose you to litigation. So I'm not giving you legal advice on that. I'm just telling you that from a practical and common sense standpoint, you need to understand that that's a problematic situation, because it can also create morale issues for you as well. All right? It could create morale issues. So be careful with that. Okay. Now, California now has passed a law that basically says that employers cannot do criminal background checks. Now, that needs explanation, actually, because they can do the criminal background check, but you can't ask about the criminal background until after you make them a conditional offer of employment. So here you've talked to 10 people, you make, you know, this individual a conditional offer of employment, you run the background check at that point, and now you find out the person has a violent history. What do you do? Well, understand that with the new law that came out effective January 1st of this year, you're in a situation where you've got to notify that applicant that, in fact, you have come across something in their criminal background check that you're concerned about and the possibility that you won't be able to hire them. Now, you do have to show the correlation between what the act was that they committed. And by the way, you can't go back more than 7 years, I believe it is now. You've got to show the correlation between the act itself and the job for which they're hiring them for. So let me keep it easy. Theft, as an example. Person did time for theft, or they've got a conviction for theft, and the job for which they're hiring them for, it's going to be for handling money. So it's what you have to do now is tell them that you're not going to be able to hire them and give them a reason why. And this has to be in writing. Then you've got to give them 5 days to decide whether or not they, okay, want to appeal your decision or submit evidence to you that the information that you gathered might be contrary to the actual facts. Now, 5 days go by. So let's say, and then on the 5th day, you have to turn around, or they have to come to you and say, yep, I've decided I want to submit evidence to you that this is not correct, or they want to be able to explain it. Now you've got to give them 5 more days to get that information to you. 5 days more. So now, what is that? Almost 10 days when you're on the bubble in terms of whether or not you're going to be able to hire this individual. Let's say after those 5 days are up, the person comes back to you and says, well, this is what it is, but you don't accept the documentation for what it is. You still have to give them in writing why you've made that decision. And in that writing, the decision not to hire them. And in that writing, you then have to turn around and inform them that you're not hiring them, but they have a right to appeal that to the Department of Labor Standards Enforcement. You know, to explain to them why you're not going to be actually hiring them, or the Department of Fair Employment and Housing. So at any rate, that's what you have to do now. So this business about violent history, I don't know that the legislators always do what they're supposed to do in terms of thinking some of these things through. And I'm not going to get on a tangent right now about these California legislators and, you know, to me how they, you know, what the business is. I see it, you know, we have so many clients and we have clients that are leaving the state based upon the over legislation that's going on, but that's for another discussion on another day. The next one to watch out for, number 5, is decreased or inconsistent productivity. Honestly, I don't get too shaken about that one, because some businesses, it's hard to be able to determine why somebody's productivity went down or inconsistency, because some businesses, like a dealership as an example, they rely on the economy. They rely on customers walking through the door. So if customers aren't walking through the door, you can't get the sales. So decreased or, you know, or inconsistent productivity, I don't necessarily get too excited about personally. The next one has to do with social isolation and poor peer relationship. Now, that one is one that you really need to be careful about, because on that one, you've got a loner. You've got somebody that doesn't speak to people. They're all off to themselves. Those are the ones that I would keep a little bit closer eye on, because maybe there's something that's going on, something that they're contemplating, something that they're not happy about. And the one person who can't get along with anybody, that to me would be, in my opinion, a concern. Now, poor personal hygiene is the next one. Again, I don't know that I get too excited about that one, but you know, that one speaks for itself, and you know, keep it in mind, but you know, don't let it ruffle your feathers, so to speak. The last one, number eight, is drastic changes in personality. Drastic changes in personality. That one, in my opinion, is one that you really want to be careful about. Here's Jim, who was always a happy-go-lucky type of individual, and all of a sudden, Jim now is a lot different than that. He's changed. Something is wrong. That's when I say it's okay to sit down and have a conversation with him, but do not, whatever you do, do not give them advice, because if they take that advice home and there's some issue that's creating the situation for them, you don't want your name going home on their lips. All right? Now, let's take a moment and switch hats real quick. Let's talk about school shootings. School shootings are the big deal now. They really are. You see it on the news. Now, Columbine was in, 1999. Do you have any idea that since 1999, how many school shootings that there have been? Believe it or not, over 200. I think the number is about 210 now, 211 now, with some things that have happened recently. That's a lot of school shootings. Now, in addition to that, out of those, there are, well, now it would be 26 of those were mass shootings, 26, 27, somewhere around in that category. Now, with the, you know, Columbine, that's a name we never forget. And as I told you a little bit earlier, the situation with the shooting in Florida or Columbine, we remember the word Columbine. That one has stuck with us, and most people remember that one as the premier shooting, if you will, because it was a mass shooting. And that particular situation, you know, they had, 21 were injured, and 12 were actually murdered. And one of them was a teacher, still a student. So it was 12 students and one teacher that were killed, and 21 additional people were injured as well. Now, believe it or not, Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold, their precise motive still remains unclear after all of these years. But the personal journals of them that they found, they said that they wished their actions, they wanted to rival the Oklahoma City bombing. So again, sometimes people do these things not because of mental illness, they do it because of other reasons. Now, I mentioned earlier about the Parkland shooting, and I mentioned that, generally speaking, I bet people don't even know the name of the high school down there. Well, I want to give you that name because I don't want you to forget it. You know, Stone is what I want you to remember is this name. It's the Stoneman, that's S-T-O-N-E-M-A-N, Stoneman Douglas High School was that shooting. And, you know, I will applaud the students who really spoke out against it. They're talking about gun control and things of that nature. But, you know, the issue about gun control, that's always going to be debated every time that there's a shooting. And whether or not you believe in the Second Amendment, I'm not trying to get into the politics of it, whether or not you believe in the, you know, the right to bear arms, whether or not you believe in, you know, the NRA. And, you know, I had a reporter one time ask me about my opinion about the NRA and assault. You know, I told him, look, you know what? I'm not going to speak for the NRA. I'm not. But the realities are, is that I don't believe personally you're going to eliminate all these guns. Oh, it looks like I'm getting a call here, so let me see who's calling here. All right, this is Jim Potts. You're on the air. Hello?
Hi.
Hello.
Jim?
Yes.
How are you today?
I'm doing just fine. Who am I speaking to?
This is Estella calling from South Carolina.
Oh.
I'm enjoying your program.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much. South Carolina, you're a long ways away.
Yeah. I've gotten wind of your program through some family members, and I, you know, thought I'd tune in today.
Okay. Well, very good. I really appreciate that. Did you have a question or a comment?
I do. I wanted to find out what you think about teachers. Should teachers be armed in a classroom?
You know, I get asked that question a lot, Estella, and I have to tell you that my personal opinion is that the answer is no. Now, I'll tell you that there was an incident about 2 or 3 weeks ago where a teacher from that school actually brought a handgun to school.
Mm-hmm.
The gun was accidentally left on his desk. Now, he ended up getting arrested. Let me tell you something. Here's the problem. The problem is that how well-trained are these individuals going to be? Now, I get it. They're going to go to the shooting range. They're going to shoot at a target. They're going to learn how to handle a gun. And that part I understand. The real problem mm-hmm. is, what are they going to do under a stressful situation? Because let me tell you, when I was in the academy, there were actually people who failed the academy, could not qualify with a gun, they couldn't hit a target that's standing still 25 yards away. Now,
okay,
you take the situation where, let's face it, these situations are very traumatic situations. The person, the teacher, mm-hmm. is going to be nervous. They're going to be trying to save the kids, trying to give the kids directions and things of that nature. How in the world are they going to be able to calmly is the key, be able to take a gun, first of all, and pull it out from wherever they have it? You know they're not going to have it sitting in their desk drawer. So they're going to have to take this gun out. They're going to have to carefully aim at somebody that might be shooting an automatic rifle at them and be able to hit that person. Mm-hmm. It is simply not that simple. I think what they need to do is that the schools need to put certain protocols and procedures in place as opposed to giving teachers weapons. Now I will.
So part two of my question is, because isn't there a risk of maybe a student getting a hold of that gun as well?
Well, there's always that risk. That's the point. You know, people don't mm-hmm. always manage their weapons the right way. And that's another failing that we have out there where people, they become irresponsible. They don't put the safety mechanisms on them. They simply do, you know, things that don't make sense. What happened with the FBI guy that was dancing a few weeks ago, and he's got his weapon stuck in his pants under his shirt, and he's dancing. Did you see that on the news?
Yeah.
What happened? Do you remember what happened?
Yeah, he dropped it and it fired. It struck someone.
Exactly. And about 4 years ago, they had another individual. He was a law enforcement officer, and he was actually in a classroom showing the students on how weapon and weapon safety, et cetera, and talking about guns. And he turns around and actually accidentally he shoots himself in the foot. I mean, you know, guns around kids, in my opinion, it's just not a safe thing to do. You know, the kids that come back up that create these things, I'm not a psychologist, you know, but they talk about bullying. They talk about how they were mistreated. I mean, I get all of that. But the realities are, is that that's just not a safe way to go, in my opinion, Estella. So.
Great. Okay.
I really do
Wonderful.
Appreciate you calling. And
Thank you very much.
I hope you keep tuning in.
Will do. Thank you, Jim. You have a great evening.
Yeah, you too. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Well, you know, that was a good question. It's all the way from, back east, and I get it. And those are the concerns. It's a hot topic. The other question that always comes up is whether or not we should, you know, what we should do about these assault weapons. The assault weapons, in my opinion, that's another question. I mean, you know, my personal opinion is that those kind of rifles should not be in the hands of our ordinary citizens. I believe assault weapons should be confined to law enforcement personnel and the military. I don't know what the average citizen needs other than going to the range and shooting up the gun range, you know, with these assault weapons. And like I said, I've got some friends of mine that have some of those, so they're probably listening in now. But the realities are is that I'm not an advocate of generally speaking about citizens having those because I just don't see a need for them. So if they want to do legislation, now somebody asked me one time, well, wait a minute. Well, suppose, because I think in Florida, matter of fact, the governor of Florida passed a law that you cannot use, that I'm sorry, that you cannot buy an assault weapon if you're under 21. Well, that's nice, but he's doing that for the votes because the realities are, as with this kid that was at the Stoneman Douglas High School, I believe, or one of those, where the father was aware of the fact that the child had this gun, and I think he gave it to him. Don't hold me to that, but there's something like that took place. My point is that there's fathers out there who will go out and buy these for their kids because they don't think their kids are going to be the ones that would do anything as horrific as some of these things that have happened. So maybe the accountability needs to be also with the parents if the parents suspect anything or make weapons available to these kids even by accident. I think that's what we have to look at a little bit closer. Now, look, I get it. This is a highly sensitive area. We're talking about the safety of our kids. I get it. And because of that, we do need to put the proper procedures and protocols in place, be it at the family level or the school level. But it has to be done. Now, if the schools are smart, they would turn around and do these safety precautions. Some of them already have them in place. Others, they haven't done it yet. A buddy of mine today sent me an email that said, I believe it's the LA Unified School District, actually just signed a big contract to have all the schools in LA with active shooter training. We have to move in that direction. We have to. Because the realities are, is that the systems we already have in place are simply not working. So, it's a sensitive area. We have to properly address it. I take my hats off to the kids from Florida who actually marched on Washington, so to speak, and they got out there and they did what they were supposed to do. But as with I stated earlier, I think that when people move on, they forget. Unless it touched them personally, families who lost a loved one, I get it. For them, they're not going to ever forget it. So, let's talk about next week. Now, next week is what I want to get into talking about. It's a couple of different things. One, I want to go a little bit more into some of this legislation in the state of California that's pending that's going to definitely impact the workplace in so many different directions. The other thing I want to talk about is how to prevent school shootings, as well as giving out safety tips when you're out and about in the general public. Also, I want to talk about certain events that have taken place as well. I want to do something a little bit more historical because, again, I also say we have not learned from the past. These things happen, we move on, and we forget. As I stated at the beginning of this, these situations have been around since the late 1700s. What does that mean? Why haven't we taken some kind of actions? And you know what? They keep talking about the issue about guns and collecting all the guns, etc. I think there was one city that's talked about that they're collecting all the guns and demanding everybody turn it in. Look, that's ridiculous. People that have guns right now, they're not turning in their guns. It's just that simple. You know, they're not going to do it. I don't think that's where it is. So it has to be proper education. We have to clamp down on things with mental illness, that we recognize the signs. I think that we have to work on these things like bullying, you know, in the schools, and now we have the internet that's contributing to that as well. Those are the kind of things that we have to take into consideration, because if we don't do that, we're going to continue to have problems. So At any rate, you've been listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts at LA Talk Radio. Now it's time to close out this show by reminding you of something that I think is very important. When you're out there in the general public or you're at work, remember this for me. I want you to be aware. I want you to be vigilant. And I want you to be safe. Signing off, and I hope you'll be tuning in next Sunday at 3 o'clock as well. Have a good evening. Bye.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.